It's 1 o'clock. It's Wednesday. You know what that means. It's time for Double Take with Liam Gadamer and Zach Boynton right here on 88.9 WNYO, the Laker Radio Network. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to Double Take on 88.9 WNYO, the Laker Radio Network. As always, Liam Gadamer here, joined alongside my good friend and co-host, Zach Boynton, and we have a great show for all of you today. Zach, first and foremost, how are you doing today?
Doing good. A lot of stuff to talk about. A lot of interesting stuff going on in sports right now, especially baseball heating up as we're coming to the close, hockey kicking off. A lot of great things going on.
Absolutely, and let's get right into it, and let's talk first about Major League Baseball and the ALCS. It's set. We have the Red Sox beating the Tampa Bay Rays in four games in the ALDS, and Zach, we both predicted it last episode.
We did, and we talked about it in depth, and we spoke about the fact of we really liked how Boston looked as a team. We thought that they were set up for success. There were a lot of veteran guys on that squad. You know, the clutch hitting has been a big part of them, especially towards the later half of the season. So, you know, going into it, we expected them to be, you know, the people who were going to come away with this. And, you know, the Rays, they played well, but at the end of the day, they just didn't have what they needed in the moments they needed it.
And it didn't look that way, right, after game one, because the Red Sox lost game one in relatively convincing fashion. The Rays were able to take that game on their home field at Tropicana. But then after that, the Red Sox just simply took over the series. They won three straight games. Their offense really came to life. And this Tampa Bay Rays team that during the regular season looked flat out unstoppable suddenly was.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of that is because, you know, you see the clutch hitting of Bogaerts, Devers, Hernandez, Schwarber, all of them just coming in with clutch moments of just power hits, and that's been a huge part of the Red Sox explosive offense going into this postseason.
Right, and they took advantage of a young Tampa Bay Rays team that does not have a lot of experience, and before the season started last year, I can't exactly recall what my comments were about the Rays, but I'm sure one of the things I said was that no Blake Snell and no Charlie Morton on this pitching staff going into this year was going to be an issue. And lo and behold, it wasn't until they got to the playoffs, until they had to rely on guys like Shane McClanahan, you know, and their rookies and Shane Baz. That's when they got burned in the big time moment.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that does have to do with experience and the veterancy of people who have been in that those positions before and had to deal with those high-stress moments. But, you know, credit to the Rays. For a lot of people didn't think they were going to be as good as they were, and, you know, they didn't have the roster that they had before, and a lot of people were questioning this young team and how far they were going to be able to take it, and they took it this far. And, you know, just the Red Sox, they looked like a dominating force, and they showed that they could be, and they toppled the untoppable, and that was the biggest part of this postseason so far.
You know what's amazing? The Red Sox in this series and in the wild card game as well against the Yankees, they looked like the 2018 Red Sox that won the World Series. Mm-hmm. And of course, in 2019, they don't make the playoffs. In 2020, they don't make the playoffs either. But in 2021, obviously, they are having a boatload of success. And a Red Sox team without Mookie Betts, without Chris Sale the way he was 3 years ago, because remember, he is coming off a relatively big injury, they are still defying expectations. And I know, Zach, that you are going to get into it once we get to our Double Take of the week. But just give me a short little, you know, your thought process of Boston, what their ceiling is in this playoff run with the roster that they have, the starting rotation they are putting out. Keep in mind the bullpen and, of course, the powerful bats. Is a World Series legitimately attainable for this team? And don't give me too much because I want to save it for your Double Take of the week.
Absolutely. And, you know, when it comes down to it, I think that they do. I think they definitely have the potential. You know, we've seen, especially their pitching, come out as a lot stronger than expected going into the postseason. And, again, relying on these good bats. I mean, let's say Enrique Hernandez batting .435 in the postseason so far is incredible. And then you have guys like Christian Vasquez, Xander Bogaerts, and then pile that on top of with the home runs they've been able to put up. And that's been the way they've won most of these games, is just through outright hitting and putting up incredible offensive numbers and being able to pull away with those stats has been incredible for them. And I think that it is going to be the thing that propels them as far as they can. I mean, I know we're going to get into it a little bit later, but I think that absolutely Red Sox have the potential to go all the way with this and be able to take it home.
And it really is amazing, right? Just the roller coaster ride that the Major League Baseball 162-game season can take your fans on, right?
Yeah.
Because the Red Sox started the season. They were in first place, you know, for a few consecutive months there. And then they fell out of first place after the All-Star break, and it was really a question mark whether this team was going to make the playoffs. Of course, they sneak into the wild card, and then they are end up beating the Yankees by putting up a huge crooked number on Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, and I think it speaks a lot to, you know, the sport of baseball overall. It's not always about, you know, staying in first the whole time. It's a marathon game. You know, you're just playing to have the shot at the end. And, you know, Red Sox found a way to clinch that opportunity, and they've capitalized it massively, and they've been able to do some great stuff as far as on the field. And I think they're going to continue to do so. I don't see this freight train coming to a stop anytime soon, and we busted through the unstoppable hurdle of the Tampa Bay Rays, and I think that there's no reason why that can't keep going.
And we are going to get to it in just a moment when we discuss the Astros and the White Sox series, the other ALDS matchup, but I do want to mention something. I think that it may be time to forgive Alex Cora and just recognize just how good of a manager this guy is. Now, obviously, I hope that he's not cheating while on the Red Sox, and I think that MLB has had a keen eye or a sharp eye on Alex Cora, especially after the investigation and subsequently becoming the manager of the Boston Red Sox. They've kept an eye on him, so I think his record remains clean throughout the last couple of years he has managed the Red Sox. But in my opinion, I think you just have to respect what Alex Cora has done as the manager of the Boston Red Sox, and I know there are Yankee fans listening, screaming at their radio saying, oh, how could you believe that Alex Cora is innocent? I don't believe Alex Cora is innocent. He was the brains behind the entire operation. But you know what? He is managing a team now that can legitimately contend with the roster they have. They are not cheating, to the best of my knowledge and Major League Baseball's knowledge. And Alex Cora deserves credit for the Red Sox success.
Absolutely.
Your thoughts on that?
Absolutely, and I think that's entirely viable. I mean, obviously you do have your hangups, you know, with the past, and I think that's something that we look at with most managers, is we look at where they've been, what stuff that's happened in the past. And of course you attribute it to their overall career, you attribute to them as a manager overall and the stuff involved with what they've done in the past, but you can't use that to discredit what they're currently doing. The team that they've been able to put together, the way that they've been able to coach this team, the way they've been able to manage their playing time, the way they've been able to manage their pitchers. I think that it truly is a testament to the fact that he can be a good manager, and the fact that, you know, we can't keep holding it against him, the fact that he cheated with the Astros. I think we have to begin to move past that and look at the fact of how good of a manager he is right now.
Absolutely, and he definitely does good work with the Boston Red Sox, but that's a perfect segue into the Houston Astros against the Chicago White Sox in the other series in the American League division set. And the Astros won the series in four games, 3-1. And they won 10-1 yesterday to really put a hammer down on the Chicago White Sox. And look, the White Sox, they were not happy after game three. I'm not sure if you exactly heard what happened, but the Astros put up a boatload of runs in the first two games at Minute Maid Park. And then in game three, in Chicago, they kind of struggled for offense. I think they still put up 4 or 5 runs, but they were not hitting to the level that they were hitting in Houston. So much so that Chicago White Sox reliever Ryan Tepera went out on record and said, wow, it's awfully interesting how the Houston Astros hit so well at Minute Maid, and then they come back to Chicago, and they're not bringing over that success. Well, the Astros shut him up real quick by putting 10 runs on the board and sending the White Sox packing yesterday.
Absolutely, and I think that comment in general, I get the fact that we're taking shots at the Astros for what they had done in the past, for their cheating scandal, but at the end of the day, baseball is very volatile in that aspect. You know, you'll have a game where your team puts up 10 runs. We saw with the Mets all season long, where you have one game where your offense is putting up 8 to 10 runs, and then next game they're barely getting one across, and it's, you know, it's sometimes you're on, sometimes you're not. And I think that that was really the story of the Astros. But really, the Astros have been a dominant offensive force in the postseason. Putting up that many runs per game on an average is insane. And then the fact of they're going to keep moving forward is going to be crazy.
Right. And let me just also mention one more thing here. Is it too early to forgive the Houston Astros? And here's my reasoning behind why it's not too early to forgive the Astros, or why you can forgive them right now. A.J. Hinch, who was managing that cheating team, is no longer a part of the organization. He is now with Detroit. Alex Cora, who is the mastermind behind the entire operation, is now in Boston. Carlos Beltran, who was an attributing factor to the cheating, is no longer in the Astros organization. And the face of the scandal itself, Carlos Correa, more than likely will not be a Houston Astro next year. You look at some of the guys in the lineup. Yordan Alvarez was not on that cheating team. Alex Bregman was. Yuli Gurriel was a rookie. He's batting .330 this year. I think he's up there in American League hitting. You know, you look at Kyle Tucker, who was still a rookie at the time. Michael Brantley, who I think wasn't really a fan of the whole operation. And then, of course, Jose Altuve. And everybody wants to put the blame on Jose Altuve. Mm-hmm. They all want to make him the face. And, of course, after Ryan Tepera's comments after Game 3, I'm not sure if you saw, but in Altuve's first at-bat, he got plunked. And how did he respond in his final three at-bats? Two home runs.
Yeah, you know, what a great way to respond.
Three-run home run to put the Astros up 10-1 and send the White Sox gone for good.
Absolutely, and that's how you should respond, really, at the end of the day. If someone is going to really call you out and then do that to you, you know what? Show them why you're the best. And I think that that's something that we have to acknowledge with the Astros. I mean, I'm not saying that they're the best, but I'm saying that they're playing like they are. And it's the fact of, if we're just going to keep holding this against them, time after time, we're never going to be acknowledged how good they actually are, and the performances of their players, the choices of their management. And I think that we have to be able to fully appreciate those things, and therefore have to be able to move on.
Well, I'm sitting here on October 13th, 2021, as a New York Mets fan saying to the Houston Astros, I forgive you. I forgive you, because if I was in your spot and I was a fan of the Astros and I was a fan of the Mets and they were cheating and an Astros fan was looking at it from an outside perspective, I would want the same thing. And I feel like this team has had enough turnover now, and officially, once Carlos Correa leaves Houston, that is the moment where I will fully forgive Houston. But for right now, I might be pulling for him. I know it sounds crazy, but I might be. And I love Dusty Baker, too. Dusty Baker came in and managed that team that A.J. Hinch left behind after a 162-game suspension and has done an admirable job. You know what kind of guy Dusty Baker is? He's the guy who puts his head down, he shuts up, he goes to work, and he lets the team on the field's play do all the talking. And that's exactly what Houston needed to do over the last 3 years, and they've done that. And they are the bar in Major League Baseball, in my opinion. Regular season and postseason. And the cheating, it's irrelevant right now. That's 3 years ago.
Absolutely, and I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, is the fact that it was 3 years ago, and we do have to move past it. However, the question I have for you about forgiveness for the Astros, Yankees fans obviously have a lot of emotions coming into this postseason, obviously losing to the Boston Red Sox and having that previous history with the Houston Astros. Who do they root for in this game?
Who do they root for in
the
series?
Who do they root for? And who do you root for? The team that knocked you out, your biggest rivals, or the team that cheated against you?
Man, I wish we had a Yankee fan on here as a guest for this week. If you're a Yankee fan, feel free to call in. I know how to answer the phone now. But I will take a shot in the dark here and say that they will root for Boston.
I just
think that there is too much animosity towards Houston. And look, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
In 2017, the Yankees had a special team and a special roster full of young players like your Clint Frazier and Gleyber Torres and Aaron Judge, who were all coming up through the system. Luis Severino, who was doing really well before his Tommy John surgery. And then they got to the ALCS, and they were facing Houston. And Houston, because they were able to get signals on which pitches were coming at what times, beat them, went to the World Series, and beat the Dodgers, too. So I think Dodger fans and Yankee fans have a right to be angry and upset. But in this series, Yankee fans, I would say just root for the Red Sox here and just put your pride on the shelf for once.
Yeah, I think that's what will happen, too. I think that there's a lot of acknowledgement between those two organizations of both being very good, the Red Sox and the Yankees. And, you know, Yankees still have high tensions about Houston. So I think that, yeah, I think they side with Boston on this one as well. And I think that that's an amazing thing to see.
It really is going to be an amazing thing to see. And for Houston, I like the roster that they have right now. And you know what's very interesting about the Yankees, and we'll hop off the Yankees wagon because we have two National League Division Series to get to. But something very interesting with the Yankees is this. The Yankees are in need of a shortstop come the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, and I know you're a Mets fan, so it may be hard for you to think about, But do you think that they would welcome Carlos Correa to the Yankees with open arms? He's a cheater. He was the face of the cheating scandal. But you know what? They eliminated the cheating as far as we know. And he's still batting 300. And he's still, I guess you can argue, one of the top left side infielders in the entire game of baseball right now.
Well, I think if that does happen and they do make that trade, I think that
Well, Correa is a free agent.
A free agent, yeah.
So they can just sign him.
I think we'll be looking at one of the biggest controversies in baseball, because when it comes down to it, while the management may obviously see the benefits in hiring him, I think the fan base is going to be so against him that we're really going to see a butting heads of management versus fan base, and you know who wins out in that exchange, and does the management want to take on that former baggage with their fan base in particular? I don't know. I mean, you want the performance out of a player, but at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot that goes into that and a lot to play off of with the fans and how that's going to play out. I don't necessarily think it would be the best move for them as far as how that all handles together, but I do think that he's a phenomenal shortstop.
I think he's a phenomenal shortstop as well, and for the few Yankee fans that I have asked, they said that they're probably looking for a left-handed shortstop. And for example, Corey Seager.
Mm-hmm.
Is on the top of that list. But if Correa was to come over in the right situation, I think that it would take some time, but they would be open to the possibility of welcoming him to the organization. But we shall see. Yankees have a lot of decisions to make come this offseason, and one of them is manager Aaron Boone. We'll discuss that on next week's show, as well as who might be able to replace Luis Rojas. But for right now, on the Aaron Boone front, Hal Steinbrenner is leaning towards bringing him back. Cue the torches Yankee fans. But let's get to the National League Division Series now. And we had one end last night. Shockingly, the Atlanta Braves, they beat the Milwaukee Brewers in four games to win the NLDS and move on to the National League Championship Series to face the winner of the Los Angeles Dodgers and San Francisco Giants, who are heading towards a decisive Game 5. But let's talk about the Braves and the Brewers first. They did it. They took down the three-headed monster of Corbin Burnes, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddie Peralta. And this is a Braves team without Mike Soroka. This is a Braves team that is putting Charlie Morton out there in Game 1, who pitched so well. Ian Anderson came out of nowhere, the young starter for the Braves, coming through, giving them 7 shutout innings. Max Fried in Game 2 gave up nothing to the Brewers all night. And they end up winning the series last night thanks to a Freddie Freeman go-ahead home run in the bottom of the 8th inning. And Will Smith, despite his struggles during the regular season to close out games for Atlanta, was able to do so without issue and send the Braves on to their second straight National League Championship Series, hoping for a rematch against the LA Dodgers.
Yeah, and I think that this is incredible. I mean, this is a Braves team that, you know, we thought had been struggling all season long. Of course, it being a tight contention between the Mets, the Braves, and the Phillies going into the end of the postseason. And of course, you know, the Mets have been having a struggling season. Like, even the fact of we had held first for so long, but with not a great record. So you didn't expect a lot coming out of our division. And then for the Braves to come out here and put on a show with, you know, you have Charlie Morton, Ian Anderson, Max Fried, coming out here and having such great starts. Then you have the bats like Freddie Freeman heating up, doing what Freddie Freeman does at the plate. It's been incredible for them, and I think that it shines a light on some potential that we didn't think was there, and that I think a lot of people underestimated. And, you know, if this team has the potential to do it, despite what everyone thought coming into it.
You know what's crazy? I'll get back to the Braves in just a moment. We are watching Hansel Robles, Kevin Pulwecki, Travis d'Arnaud, all these former Mets in their respective championship series. Wilmer Flores, Justin Turner, who's playing at third base for the LA Dodgers. Unbelievable, isn't it? Because I remember just watching Kevin Pulwecki and saying to myself, this guy is never going to be a major league catcher. And there he is ripping a 2-run double off of Gerrit Cole in the wild card game. Of course, I sat there and I watched Hansel Robles on multiple occasions throw his hand up to indicate a pop-up to his infield, and meanwhile, it's going 475 feet out to dead center field. I have seen Justin Turner hit nothing at the plate, and then the Dodgers pick him up, for pretty much nothing, and he's a 300 hitter. Wilmer Flores, I will always have love for Wilmer Flores. I think we can both speak on the fact that we always knew there was a great player and better man wearing that Mets uniform.
Absolutely. And then, of course, you have Travis d'Arnaud, who, you know, he was struggling at the plate. I was at his final game with the Mets where he overthrew second base twice. You're like, oh my gosh, this is the end for him. And then next year he gets picked up and has a silver slugger.
Yeah, 330 home runs, 90 RBIs, yeah. Immaculate defense.
Yeah, the curse of the Mets just continues to prove itself.
Being a Mets fan is tough. You got to be a special type of resilient to be a New York Mets fan. But let's go through one topic of conversation with the Braves that we need to talk about. Freddie Freeman, like Carlos Correa, is a free agent after this season, and there have been some disparity in where, you know, the Braves would like to pay Freeman and where Freeman would like to get paid by Atlanta. And it's kind of gotten to the point here, despite the Braves being in the thick of a playoff race, that the relationship very well might end between the two come the free agency period this winter. After that home run last night, I don't know if there's a way that you can't bring him back. I know it's one moment, and I know it's one home run. But when the Braves had nothing, and they had a chance to move on to the NLCS, remember, Albies wasn't hitting that well. You got fill-ins like Eddie Rosario out there, of course, Travis d'Arnaud as well. Freddie Freeman's the guy. The superstar came up to the plate against the best left-handed reliever in all of baseball. Okay, second best left-handed reliever in all of baseball behind Aaron Loop, Josh Hader, and hit a bomb off Hader and sealed the series for the Atlanta Braves. Zach, you have to bring him back.
You do.
You have to give him everything he wants, because Atlanta belongs to Freeman and Freeman belongs to the Braves.
Absolutely. He is their franchise player. He has been a nonstop consistent monster for the Braves. He's been such a good player. He's been so good for the organization. He's a great guy. I don't see how you don't use him as your face, your platform. Pay him what he wants. Make him that you know, all-star player for you, that pedestal player. And I think you have to. I think this goes on to seal that, but I feel like even in the past, you know, multiple MVP titles, he's had Golden Gloves. I don't see how you don't just seal the deal on the spot with Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, and I think going further than that, I just think you have to make him a Brave for life.
Yeah.
Blank check.
Absolutely.
Blank check. Here you go. We want you until you retire. How much do you want? We'll pay it.
Yeah, I think he's the Fernando Tatis of the Braves.
Yeah, and he's earned it. He is the face of the franchise. Yes, you could say Ronald Acuna Jr., but Freeman was there first. And Freddie has been manning first base for as long as we can remember, for a team that has won the NL East for as long as we remember. But let's get into our last NLDS series, and then we will head to our first break here on Double Take. It's the Dodgers and the Giants. Zach, they're headed to a decisive Game 5, win or go home. My question's easy for you. Who do you have and why?
So for me, I go with the Dodgers in this game. And here's the great thing, though, is the fact of this game, the series went to a decisive Game 5, speaks volumes. Both teams are very strong. We both thought they were going to be very strong going into the postseason. I think that the Dodgers have just shown more in clutch hitting and rough situations. I think that Trey Turner is having himself a time, and I think the Dodgers overall are having themselves a time at the plate, and I don't see that coming to a halt. I think it's going to be a close game within one to two runs, but I do think the Dodgers pull this one away.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a very close game too, and I think it's going to be a heartbreaker for one team, right? And it's going to be played at Oracle Park, of course, in San Francisco, the home of the Giants, and I'm going to go with the Dodgers as well. I hate to go with the easy pick, but the Giants, look, they've proven it all year. They've been resilient all year. Mm-hmm. They have a chance to prove themselves once again and prove the doubters wrong, for example, you and I. But for the Dodgers, they just have too much, in my opinion. Starting pitching is too good.
Yep.
The bullpen is too good. That middle infield is just electric. Trey Turner, Corey Seager, Justin Turner, of course. Max Muncy no longer playing at first base because of his impending Tommy John surgery.
Yep.
But when you have Cody Bellinger, who's been hitting a little bit better, and Mookie Betts in the corners, Chris Taylor, of course, out there in center field, who also is a free agent after this year, I just think when all said and done, Dave Roberts is a better manager than Gabe Kapler is, and the Dodgers are a deeper team than the San Francisco Giants are, and that's why I have them winning and going towards a rematch against the Atlanta Braves in the NLCS. Yes, and I'll get into those predictions once we have a decisive winner between the Dodgers and the Giants by next week's show.
Absolutely, I'm in the same boat. Absolutely, I think it's going to be Dodgers Braves, and of course, with my double take in prior, I think the Dodgers win this and move on later on.
Right, Zach, and we are going to head to our first break here on Double Take. On the other side, Zach is going to break down the National Football League. We have some news with John Gruden, and how did Zach and I do with our Week 5 picks? All that and more when we return on Double Take on 88.9 WNYO, the Laker Radio Network. Welcome back to 88.9 WNYO, the Laker Radio Network, for Double Take on Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m. On the other side of this break, Zach and I broke down Major League Baseball in all four division series. We have three of them done. Red Sox, of course, beating Tampa in four games, Astros defeating the White Sox in four games, and the Braves beating the Brewers in four games. But now it's time to talk about the National Football League and the news surrounding the former head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, John Gruden.
Absolutely. John Gruden has resigned as head coach for the Las Vegas Raiders after emails were leaked that involved racist, homophobic, and misogynistic comments from Gruden. You know, this was from a probe within the Washington football team and their organization, and that led to his resigning. At the end of the day, the National Football Organization has no tolerance for this. There's no place for it. Aaron Rodgers put it best. He said, this league has no ability to deal with people like this. They shouldn't be here. And I think that just reigns supreme here. But the fact of such an iconic figure was involved with this is heartbreaking for the league.
And John Gruden just signed a 10-year contract, did he not, to remain coach of the Raiders?
Yeah, he signed a long-term extension with the Raiders to be their go-ahead guy for the time going forward. And this is one of those things where it's just an organization didn't need this. An organization that's trying to make a comeback, that's trying to like kickstart after moving to Vegas, and they're trying to be that big team in their division. But this is just a kick in the face. This is absolutely just disgusting and disrespectful to not only the league itself, but to his team, his players, and for, you know, everything as a whole.
And when this came about, there was no going back. He was never going to coach another game in the National Football League again, nor obviously for the Las Vegas Raiders either. But just to give my two cents on this, racist, homophobic, or misogynistic comments have no place in the National Football League, and they have no place in today's society. So if you are going to speak like that or speak to others like that, you should definitely be removed from whatever situation you find yourself in, and especially being a head coach of a professional football team. Obviously not the way you should ever go about things. The NFL made the right call here. The Buccaneers made the right call to take him out of their Ring of Honor. And of course the Raiders made the right decision as well. And I won't say you have to give credit to Gruden, but Gruden knew he made a mistake, and Gruden knew that this was something that there was no going back from, and resigned on the spot, which is good for all parties.
Absolutely, and I think that's something that you have to acknowledge, the fact that, you know, they gave him the ultimatum, step away, or you're getting fired, make your call. And he decided to go out with at least somewhat dignity and say that, you know, I messed up and I'm walking away. And, you know, the Buccaneers do put it best. They mentioned the fact of, we understand and we respect what coach has done in the past, but we cannot condone his behavior. And as that has no place for within our organization or the league. Again, you see the achievements of the past, you acknowledge them, but you don't have to acknowledge the person.
Exactly. You do not have to acknowledge the person, and now John Gruden just goes into irrelevancy as he tries to rebuild his reputation, and obviously needs to think about the way that he treats and speaks to others and about others as well. But let's get into some lighter news. But is it lighter news? Because the New York Giants, it looked like, Zach, it looked like your New York Giants were going to upset the Cowboys.
Yep.
And then suddenly Mike Glennon was in the game. Saquon Barkley was out of the game. Obviously, Daniel Jones was out of the game, and it just all fell apart from there.
It really has. You know, it's really just been a tough go of it, even when we're starting to bounce back as an organization. Currently, the Giants have 10-plus players on the IL, consisting of Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley, Sterling Shepard, Kenny Galladay, Kadarius Toney, Darius Slayton, Jabril Peppers, basically our main star athletes.
And can't you say that there are 10 of the best 15 players
on
this team?
Yes, absolutely. We're missing our starting center. We're missing a couple of linebackers, cornerback. I'm like, it is a mess right now in the Giants organization. And this has been, you know, a consistent issue. You know, Saquon Barkley obviously getting out for an extended period last season and now happening again this season. You know, and look, some people are hopeful. It could be a week to 2 weeks. It's an ankle sprain. But you put Daniel Jones in the position you put him in. Daniel Jones was out on the field. Basically, his only other quote-unquote star player was Evan Ingram, which there's been a lot of comments about if he's actually been as solid as he thinks or if he's as solid as the Giants organization believes, stuff like that. And, you know, when it comes down to it, Daniel Jones tried to be the playmaker. He tried to be the guy, pulls the ball on the five-yard line, tries to make the outside run play, lowers his shoulder, gets rocked.
It did not look good.
No.
And that's something I do not like seeing, because I called the soccer game for the Oswego Lakers earlier this week, mm-hmm. and something similar happened. Two players came together, one from Brockport, one from Oswego. They butted heads with one another. Both of them got up like there was no issue. And then, just 10 seconds later, on the other side of the field, the Laker who had butted his head just fell. Just fell right to the ground. And that's exactly what happened to Daniel Jones. That is scary.
Absolutely. And it's something that the NFL has tried to touch on, and something that, you know, football as a whole has tried to deal with, is the fact of hitting. The fact of people need to be taught proper hitting. The fact of Daniel Jones, he's not that accustomed to trying to be that, like, lower your shoulder and make the hit type play to go for the end zone. He's very much been a try and, like, break some ankles, make some moves, try and make some passes while scrambling. He lowered his head. He lowered his shoulder, went head first, and, you know, when it came to both guys lowering, trying to make those plays, bad things happen, and it happens on a consistent basis. I can attest to someone who had a severe concussion playing football. You know, you're out there, and you're trying to do what you think is the best in the moment, but if you're not doing the proper form, movements in the moment, you're going to end up being hurt. And that's what happened with Daniel Jones. He walks off the field stumbling. He doesn't really know where he's at, gets carted off afterwards on the sideline. And, you know, he's questionable for how long. Nobody really knows right now. They have to continue to do more tests, concussion screening, see where he's going forward. But it's not looking good for the return of Daniel Jones. And as a whole, the Giants season going forward, obviously with the Rams upcoming and the offensive force, you know, that they've been. What do you think about how the Giants are going to be able to bounce back from this?
Well, let me just say first and foremost on Jones, the way that he plays as a quarterback is very, you know, like I said, it's a watered down Lamar Jackson. You know, he likes to jump out of the pocket. He likes to rush. He likes to be aggressive. He likes to, you know, help gain that extra yard for his team when they need it. But in doing so and in playing like that, you are going to put yourself at risk for a mm-hmm. multitude of different injuries, especially concussions. So that's what concerns me, because once you get your first concussion, it's hard to stop the floodgates.
Yeah.
And if it happens to Daniel Jones again, I'm unsure of his future, you know, his long-term future as a QB in the NFL. But I digress. He's still undergoing more tests. The most important thing for the Giants and Daniel Jones is to not rush him back. Mm-hmm. If he does not play another game for the Giants this season, recovering from this concussion, so be it.
Yeah.
Simply put, you're not going to like it, Zach, but I'm sure you agree. You're not making the playoffs this year, and you're not winning the Super Bowl.
No.
Okay? So the priority is the health of Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, your future. You hold them out for as long as you need to, so when next year comes along, or a couple years after that, when you have a better team around them, they'll be ready, healthy, and ready to go and compete.
Absolutely. And, you know, we'll see where the Giants end up this season. I don't think that they're going to be in those playoff slots or anything of that nature, but, you know, we're going to see these guys come back. At least everybody, but possibly Jones. We'll see what happens with Jones. But, you know, we'll see if they're able to, you know, maybe bounce back, get a couple games going in their favor. But you touched on an important point, I think. When it comes to running quarterbacks in the NFL, they often don't stay in the NFL for long. It's a stapled part of the NFL. Is, you know, you have guys like Tom Brady that have been around as long as they have. Because when Tom Brady runs, it's an event. We talk about it. It's news, because he sits back, sits in the pocket, likes to be safe with his linemen and throw deep passes. And that's what's been his successful key. And, you know, you have guys like Patrick Mahomes who are trying to make the statement that, you know, running quarterbacks have a place and they can be effective. But you also get in the situations like this where you often see injuries start stacking up with the quarterbacks that like to scramble, like to move, like to try and rush. And I think that there's some give and take in that and how people want to proceed going forward in that mindset.
I think that's a very great point. And I know what people are thinking right now listening. Oh, well, what about Lamar Jackson? You know, he's been a running quarterback and he hasn't had a lot of injuries. You're right.
Yeah.
But not everybody is Lamar Jackson.
No.
And not everybody who is going to be a scrambling quarterback like Daniel Jones is and like Lamar Jackson is going to be able to elude defenders and injury as well as Jackson has. And we saw that in Daniel Jones. It finally came back to bite him the way that he's been playing. And I think you touched on a really great point. The fact that Tom Brady is playing quarterback right now for the team that just won the Super Bowl a few months ago at over 40 years old
yeah.
is because he has adjusted his style of play to have longevity, and that includes not taking that extra risk. He is very general in the way that he plays. He's going to get back in the pocket. He's going to throw his passes, short passes, long passes, but you're not going to see him run. And when you do, I think you put it best, it's an event, and we are talking about it, but that is why Tom Brady has been able to stay as great as he has been for as long, and been a big part of the NFL and one of its best quarterbacks ever since he came in.
Absolutely. Moving on from the Giants, another struggling New York team, the New York Jets played Atlanta on Sunday in London at 9:30 in the morning. Crossed the pond. And the Jets, they've been looking somewhat promising. They looked somewhat promising during this game, but...
Zach, I called you...
You did.
...on Thursday of last week, and I said, Zach, I found the bet I want to do, because I've been talking about doing a bet, and I said it on last week's show that I was going to think about doing a 16-team parlay. I quickly realized that that would be a colossal waste of money, so I went for a little bit of a shorter parlay, including prop bets, and one of the prominent prop bets that I used was the over on Zach Wilson's passing yards. And you looked at that and you said, I kind of like that. And then you went in on it with me.
Yeah.
The amount we spent will not be disclosed. It wasn't too much. It was a hell of a payout if we were able to win it. Did not happen. Zach Wilson throws for 195 yards, and Zach, his passer rating was 67.
Yes. That was the big issue. Throws for 194 yards.
And my day was ruined by 11:45 a.m.
That's the tough part about
that. That was the brutal part.
Yeah, once the games happen in London, and it's in an effort to introduce European culture to a very American sport. It sets you off on a bad note. He didn't throw a single touchdown. Jets found a lot more success from running. I think Zach Wilson has really struggled the start of the season. He throws a lot of interceptions. It's been a big problem. And so that leads me to asking you, many Jets fans have begun to doubt the acquisition of Zach Wilson. Is this a systematic problem of the Jets, or is there some truth in Zach Wilson's recent inconsistencies as a quarterback? We've seen a lot of interceptions. The Jets' offense still managed to find ways to score points with rushing and being able to kick some decent field goals and make it a relatively close game, given all things considered.
Yeah, to answer your question, I think it's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. And I'm not ready to kind of attack Robert Saleh's offensive system, because I do think that he has been pretty good as the Jets coach, for the most part. Obviously, the team is 1-4, and that's not what you want to see. But
yes.
Robert Saleh only has so much talent to work with. But let me go back to my double take of the week a couple weeks ago. I said that Zach Wilson ain't the guy. When we look back 2 or 3 years from now, it might even take less than that.
Yeah.
We are going to have the same conversation that we had with Sam Darnold with Zach Wilson. So I stand by that. Jets fans are starting to see it as well. But I think the next game after the bye week for the Jets, because the Jets do not play this upcoming Sunday, is going to be very important, because Zach Wilson made it public that he is going home. And he is going to train with his personal quarterback coach, who can just get him back to what he used to be and how he used to play, and kind of just free his mind a little bit. Because you get to the NFL, you have 1,000 things running through your head as a quarterback. Oh, this guy's going to be there. That guy's going to be there. Oh, which route do I take?
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing about rookies.
Calm him down, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the big thing about rookies that we've seen in the NFL overall. And I'm not talking about specifically this year, where you have a lot of rookie quarterbacks, but in general, where you're struggling to make those reads, make those choices, make those calls. And sometimes you really do need to just take a step back, reassert yourself. You're an NFL quarterback. It's time to just start thinking as a quarterback, not specifically as an NFL quarterback. Just picture yourself in that spot doing what you do best. And I think that that's what Zach Wilson needs to do, because I think a lot of it is him overanalyzing the game. And sometimes just, you know, those split second decisions have costed him in clutch moments.
Yeah, and one of the mottos that I like to follow in life is KISS, and KISS is keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
And that is what you have to do. You have to keep it simple, not overreact to things, and just, you know, play the way that got Zach Wilson to the show and got him to be a number two pick in the NFL draft. But we are about to head to our final break on Double Take. Zach, let's get into our week six picks. And like we did last week, we are going to talk about the games in which we differ. And Zach, the first one is the second game on our list, the Dolphins and the Jaguars. Yeah, I kind of took a double take when I saw your pick, no pun intended. You took the Jaguars over the Dolphins. I took Miami, but what's your thoughts? I know Miami's not playing well, but this is the Jaguars.
That's kind of where I based around. I think that the Jaguars are in need of something to bounce back from. I think the Dolphins have just been without Tua, have just been struggling offensively. They've been struggling to find out how they're going to play as a team. And I think the Jags, while struggling, have been semi-consistent and have been able to at least show that there is potential there. And I think that this might be their breakout game.
I think, well, you know what, certainly, and they definitely are due for one, right? Because Urban Meyer has not obviously had his fair share of controversy, and Trevor Lawrence has not looked like the Trevor Lawrence of Clemson. But if there is an opportunity for them to get that win, it is going to be against the Dolphins this week. But I'm going to take my man Tua. I'm going to have faith in Brian Flores that the Dolphins will not lose to one of the worst teams in the NFL.
Very true. Moving on to our next game that we differ. We have Texans versus the Colts. I'm taking the Colts. You are taking the Texans. Why do you think the Texans have a shot in this game? What makes you think that the Texans are going to be able to pull it out? I know Colts have been struggling overall, but the Texans have been also in the same boat. So what puts you there?
You know, not really much behind it here. I just see the Colts as a team. And look, they were able to sneak out a win, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe last week. But I just see the Texans as the better team. You know, simply put, not really much behind this. I would be lying if I said I knew all the ins and outs on both rosters. But just looking at this matchup and looking at how both of these teams have performed early on this season, I think going with the Texans makes the most sense. But I could definitely see the Colts winning, just like we saw in your pick with the Dolphins.
Absolutely,
and the Jaguars.
And I think that is a testament to the fact that the Colts, you know, made it a close game against the Ravens and were able to almost pull that game out. But moving on, we have the Bengals versus the Lions. I took the Bengals. You took the Lions.
I understand why you took the Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. But the Detroit Lions have been underlooked for far too long. This is not as bad of a football team as many people think they are. That was disrespectful last week for the line to be plus 10.
Yeah.
Against the Vikings.
I agree.
And the Lions, you know, this plus, they only needed 3. They didn't need 10. And this week, I think the Lions are actually going to pull it out. Look, I have been waiting for the Cincinnati Bengals to put it all together. They have the talent there. Jamar Chase. They, of course, have Joe Burrow. It just has not come all together for me. And for the Lions, they are due.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I think that the Bengals are going to be able to pull this one out only because I think they have that talent. I think they have the opportunity for that to come together. Moving on, though, we have the Cardinals versus the Browns. I went with the Cardinals. You went with the Browns. For me, I think the Cardinals have just been such a dominating force, and I think that they're going to be able to just pull this away.
Yeah, obviously, the Cardinals are the last remaining undefeated team in the NFL, but I think that they have not faced a team as good as the Cleveland Browns yet this season. It's their toughest task. And that's why I think they will eventually go down.
Gotcha. I mean, moving on, we have the Cowboys versus the Patriots. I have the Patriots. You have the Cowboys.
What did I write?
You wrote the Cowgirls, which I, you know, as a Giants fan, I have to sympathize with as you know, a fan of the sport and a disliker of the Cowboys. But I think that the Patriots pulled this game away. I understand that the Cowboys, you know, won last week against the Giants, obviously. Ooh, had 10 players out.
Right.
And it was still a close game, and we were able to put up points even afterwards. But I think
Mike Glennon.
Yup. I think the Patriots have the better offense, more concise team, obviously going toe-to-toe with the Buccaneers 2 weeks ago. I think that they're the ones who pulled this away.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a really close game, too. I think that the Cowboys are due for a little bit of a tough loss, and I thought that it was going to happen last week. But, of course, like we mentioned earlier, Barkley Barkley and Daniel Jones get injured relatively early in the game, and then that pretty much put that one on ice. I think the Cowboys are going to win this one, but I think it's going to be very close, and I would not be surprised if the Patriots came away with the win, but if you put a gun to my head, Cowboys.
Fair enough. And then our final pick that we differ on is Raiders versus Broncos. I took the Broncos. You took the Raiders. For me, I think there's too much controversy there. They're out there. They're without their head coach. I think that the Broncos have just been playing really well overall this season, and I think that they're going to be able to just pull it away from the Raiders.
Yeah, you know, I made this pick not thinking about John Gruden. And the first game without him, it might be a little bit of a transition period. I'm still going to stick with the Raiders. Mm-hmm. I think they've had a great year, and I think that there just is enough of a difference between where the Raiders are at right now and where the Broncos are at right now for me to take Las Vegas in this game.
Fair enough. And that concludes our picks. Liam is still winning by 3, and that's what we've got as far as picks go.
I went up by 1 point last week.
You did.
Feeling really good. But we are going to head to our final break on Double Take. When we come back, let's discuss the National Hockey League, because we got started last night, and it is fight night in D.C., and I am gleaming. And, of course, our Double Take of the week. Don't miss it. We will be right back on 88.9. WNYO, the Laker Radio Network. Welcome back to Double Take on 88.9 WNYO, the Laker Radio Network. Liam Godmer here alongside my good friend and co-host Zach Boynton. And Zach, to end the show today, we have two very, very important segments. First, the National Hockey League, which finally returned last night, the first game of the 2021-2022 regular season. The Pittsburgh Penguins and the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Penguins beat the Lightning 6-2. 3 empty net goals for Pittsburgh. Do keep that in mind, which does not happen often.
Mm-hmm.
But the Lightning, on the night where they rose the banner to commemorate their back-to-back Stanley Cup championships, they came out extremely flat. Like, it would have been hard for the Penguins to not win this game by a sizable margin. That's how poor the Lightning played. So my question for you, Zach, is this. Not just in hockey, but in all of sports. Is there something to teams coming out flat after either a championship banner raising or retiring, you know, a legendary player's number?
Absolutely. I think it's something that's been talked about time and time again, where it's you don't see a lot of back-to-back winners, a lot of back-to-back champions, championship teams. And a lot of that has to do with expectations going into a season. A lot of that has to do with roster changes. A lot of teams, they try and change up those rosters to be like new and fresh coming into the new season and pick up some different acquisitions. And sometimes those don't necessarily mold as well. And I think that oftentimes, with those previous expectations on the line, leads them to flounder in their first games, and sometimes it leads them to come out stronger, sometimes it leads them to come out weaker, and overall, it usually leads to down seasons. And I think that's possible with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I mean, it's something that we saw, you know, with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were a team that was very strong during the season for football, and then they came out and they've had a rough go of it this season, and I think that a lot of that has to do with teams that are once doing well, trying to bounce back and do it all again is very not normal.
Great points all around, Zach. And the game after that was the Seattle Kraken. The 32nd NHL franchise opened their season, opened their entire existence last night in a game in Las Vegas against the Golden Knights, the 31st NHL team, the Vegas Golden Knights, and a 4-3 win for the Vegas Golden Knights over Seattle. Let me tell you, there is no team in the National Hockey League who does better pregame hype than the Vegas Golden Knights. They had on the ice a CGI Kraken.
Yep.
Getting just burned. Just fire all over the Kraken.
By a night.
And right by a night. Yes, absolutely. If you have not seen the video, please go check it out. It was just a sight to watch. And even though if I was a Kraken fan at the game last night, I would not have been upset. That's really, really cool.
It's very cool. It's true Vegas fashion. Always put it on a spectacle and being great hype people.
Absolutely. If you ever find yourself in the Vegas area, Zach, or anybody listening, you have to go check out a Knights game. It's an experience
absolutely
like no other. And the first goal in Seattle Kraken history, it goes to Ryan Donato, one of my favorite players. Spent a lot of time throughout the league. He spent some time in Minnesota, spent some time in San Jose and Boston as well, has now finally found a home in Seattle. But, Zach, tonight, It is fight night in D.C. Tommy. Yes, Tom Wilson. Tom Wilson, the guy who shoved Artemi Panarin without a helmet down to the ice and nearly cracked his head open. Vengeance tonight. And I am so ready. I am so hyped up. I am ready to run through my wall, Zach. I am ready. I'm going to get to it in my double take of the week, but I have not been this excited for a sporting event since the Rangers were in the Stanley Cup Final in 2014, 7 years ago.
Folks, pull out your paychecks because you're about to get a pay-per-view fight. Yeah. About to get a Wednesday night fight night on the UFC.
Wednesday night fight night, baby. Ryan Reeves and Tom Wilson, your comeuppance is coming, Tommy boy. It is coming. But now, our final segment of Double Take. You've been waiting for it. The Double Take of the Week. Zach, what is it this week?
For me, I'm saying the Dodgers are going to be the ones who beat the Giants and the Braves, but are ultimately doubling down on my previous Double Take, going to be losing to the Boston Red Sox in the World Series finale.
Wow, certainly. Dodgers-Red Sox rematch of a World Series of a few years ago would definitely be an interesting sight to see. And, of course, Alex Verdugo, who is on, you know, within the Dodgers organization at that time, now with the Red Sox, and Mookie Betts, who is the superstar with the Red Sox, now on the Dodgers. What an interesting dynamic that would be. And for my double take of the week, yes, it's about you, Tommy boy. You're stuck in my head. Tom Wilson and Ryan Reeves fight within the first 2 minutes of the game tonight, and Ryan Reeves will defeat him. I'm ready. I'm like SpongeBob. I'm ready. So, to leave you here on this episode of Double Take, Tommy, see you tonight, buddy. Rangers are coming for you. Thank you so much for joining us right here on 88.9 WMYO, the Laker Radio Network, for Double Take. Until next week, talk to you soon.